A warning to listeners or readers. The following content may at times include details about abuse, rape, suicide, domestic violence, and other types of trauma that may be emotionally confronting or triggering.
Welcome to Raised by an Invisible Village, where we unbundle the incredible power of the people who influence our lives. I'm Kathy Houlihan, your host, who will be guiding you on a very personal transformative journey. My personal story of uncovering the diverse characters that made up my invisible village, who together enabled acceptance, growth, and success. I would like to introduce you to Sheila and Wayne, very special, generous people who made a significant impact not only on my life, but to so many other people. The conversation that we had was after spending almost two amazing weeks together. Over a 38-year period, I'd only caught up with them several times and for only short bursts of time. They had moved long ago back to their hometown of Canberra from Alice Springs. This time, we got the opportunity to spend very special quality time together. Both Sheila and Wayne are now well and truly retired and a young late 70s, early 80s. When we first met all those years ago, I was only 13. They would have been younger than I am now. Sheila came to Australia from England when she was only a child. Both her parents were deeply religious, with her father having been a pastor for most of his life. Very, very strict upbringing, and not surprising that she could relate to my childhood world growing up in a ridiculous restrictions of religion. Wayne, on the other hand, grew up in Maryborough, Queensland, a proud Aboriginal man who basically ran away to join the Navy. He spent the majority of his early adult life in the Australian Navy, even servicing the Vietnam War in the early 1960s. Sheila went on to establish a career as a nurse, and this is how both Sheila and Wayne eventually met. I'm actually pretty sure Sheila used to jump the fence to meet Wayne in the Navy compound. Subsequently, after leaving the Navy, Wayne became an officer in the Australian Federal Police. When he recalled this moment in time, he was absolutely delighted that he had earned himself a career in riding motorbikes, a passion he continues to have to this day. Our conversation in this fireside chat will share how they came to be in Alice Springs from Canberra and their subsequent appointment to becoming house parents at Matthew Cottage, a home that was in town away from the main St. Billy's Village, which was located just outside the gap of Alice Springs, about 10 km in distance. Our conversation took place in the warmth of their lounge room, away from the freezing Canberra July winter cold. And joining us were their two pugs, one of which sat very comfortably on Wayno's lap. You will hear throughout the recording the poor little thing coughing, so please excuse this sound. Sheila and Wayne were absolutely two people who were and continue to be critical characters, not only in my invisible village, but for so many other children that are now adults. I hope you enjoy hearing our relaxed, joyful, and emotional conversation.
When did you first meet me? Can you remember meeting me for the first time?
Yeah, it would have been in 84.
84?
When you first came into Matthew's Cottage, and no one can remember who brought you around to Matthew's Cottage.
You know, I can just remember being in a car. The police brought me around.
Or your dad?
No, definitely wasn't dad.
Definitely wasn't dad.
No, definitely wasn't dad.
Might have been a welfare worker.
Might have been a welfare worker. Because I remember that I got picked up at the post office by the police and then taken to the police station. And then from there, it's a bit of a blur. But I remember you coming outside. I remember that part.
Coming outside to meet me.
Coming outside and...
At Matthew's Cottage.
At Matthew's Cottage.
Right. Yeah.
And feeling instantly like I was going to be okay.
I really can't remember who brought you around, but I remember you sort of coming and you're looking like this strange 13-year-old.
Strange, that
is. Oh, well, no, what's going to happen to me? Yeah, you know, really unsure of yourself.
Mm.
Pretty unsure of yourself. And I don't think there was anyone to welcome you, was there, as far as the kids were concerned?
No, I don't remember the girls being there. I just remember you coming out and kind of putting your arm around me and taking my bags.
Did I? Well, isn't that interesting? I don't remember some of that.
Because people won't know and understand what Matthew Cottage is. And no. I describe my relationship with you as my foster parents because to say house parents. People just don't have an understanding of what house parents. So for me,
no,
it's easy just to say foster parents. So Matthew Cottage.
Matthew's Cottage was the house in town. It came under the auspices. Of St. Mary's.
Under control of Mary's.
St. Mary's was a village outside of Alice Springs, and it was mainly for children from the bush to come in for school.
For school. Yeah, right.
And there was one cottage there that was disabled.
Yeah.
For just disabled kids. And Matthew's Cottage was the townhouse where it was emergency placements.
Yeah.
And it was mainly for little ones.
Oh, really?
Little ones picked up by the police or whatever their circumstances, and they just dropped them off and we'd have an ice cream on the grass out the front or something.
Yeah, well, I remember all the babies coming in and bath them, and I just love all those little Aboriginal babies.
Oh, they were beautiful, weren't they?
So cute.
Kathy used to grab the baby and go and bath it, and I'd go down to Kmart and buy a new set of clothes.
Yeah.
It'd take before and after.
Yeah, God, there would be heaps of kids that would have come in. Yeah. So it was Forest
Crescent.
Was that part of St. Mary's too?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it was. It was welfare. Strictly welfare.
Yeah, right.
Forest Crescent. We didn't have a lot to do with that.
No, we didn't. No.
But I don't think it was. But I don't know.
How fun.
They were all the older ones. It's a wonder you didn't go there, being the age that you were when you came
in. Yeah, I know. But see, even then, slide into all moments. What if I ended up there and not at Matthew Cottage?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kathy came in and she became the second mother to all these children. I remember one particular girl who was in the house at the time who wanted to bath one of the babies. I don't know whether you remember this or not, but she just ran a hot bath.
Oh,
just hot water. Someone came out screaming at me and what was going on. It was somebody who should have known better.
Yeah, okay.
But we saved a baby.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, it was pretty awful. And
how did you end up at Matthew Cottage?
We drove in.
Well, yeah, we moved out there ostensibly to get a job with the Aboriginal Development Commission in Alice Springs because the boss out there in Alice Springs was a bloke I'd worked for here in Canberra.
Oh, okay.
And I told him that I really would one stage like to go out west and work with the communities.
Yeah, okay.
So he got transferred out there and then he sent word to me that there was a vacancy out there.
Okay, at the Aboriginal Development Commission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had left the ADC and left.
And the ADC Queanbeyan was what?
The Aboriginal Development Commission. Yeah.
And we'd left Queanbeyan by that stage, gone down to Naruma. We'd burned out, we were looking after.
We had a boys' home up here.
Boys' home.
Yeah.
In Queanbeyan.
How long did you work in that boys' home?
About a year.
Back to. The Aboriginal Development Commission.
Yeah, so we were living in a caravan down at Naruma. We'd bought one that had been set up. And then to move out to Alice Springs, I recommissioned the caravan and had to dig it out of its where it sat for about 5 or 6 years. And had to do up all the brakes and electrical stuff. In the process, I broke all the wheel studs.
Oh!
They'd been on there for so long. So, pull them apart, put new wheel studs in, get it registered. Then we drove out to Alice Springs.
So you deliberately went from Canberra to Alice Springs?
No, we went from Canberra to Naruma, which is down the south coast.
Yeah.
Because when we left the boys' home, we had to learn how to speak without four-letter words.
Yeah,
righty-o. Wow. That was really quite funny. Because it was real low.
So you had to re-emerge into the community.
Yeah, you did.
Wow.
You'd go into the shower and you wouldn't hear a swear word and you'd think, oh.
Yeah, wow.
But they were good kids. The boys were pretty good kids.
Yeah, they weren't too bad. Yeah, so then we just travelled out to Alice Springs. We went up Sturt Highway.
Yeah.
when it was still 173 clicks of dirt.
And it took us 7 hours.
With the caravan.
Caravan
didn't fall apart. No. At one stage. I always thought you had started a trip around Australia and you stopped in Alice Springs. I didn't realise that you'd actually deliberately chosen to go out to Alice Springs to work.
Yeah, we did. And when we drove past St Mary's Children's Village, I just knew I was going to go there and I was going to ask them what it was all about. Anyway, Wayne went to work and I was left in the caravan park, and there was an ad in the paper about a week later to tell me, to say there was an opening for Matthew's cottage in town. But what the hell is that? So, okay, that was it. Boom, out. Didn't hear back from, I gave them references from down here.
Yeah.
Didn't hear back from at the time. So I went out there and said, what's going on? He said, you can start when they leave. Oh, we got the job. It was very lackadaisical.
And what was the job description?
House parents.
House parents.
At the Crisis Cottage.
It was called a Crisis Cottage.
Yeah, Matthew's Cottage was the Crisis Cottage.
Yeah, okay.
And I was still working at ABC.
Yeah.
Mm. But Sheila was getting help from the minister's wife.
Oh, what was that?
No, I wasn't getting any help from her until later on.
Oh, was I?
Yeah, it's all right, yeah. It's fine.
And then, I don't know, for some reason we made the suggestion, whoever, that we turn it into a couple's job, like a husband and wife team job.
Yeah.
So I left the ADC then. Matthew's Cottage.
So when you first started there, Sheila, before it became a husband and wife position, did you have to stay there overnight?
We had our own accommodation.
So you stayed there as well, but you went to work at ADC and you just stayed there caring.
Stayed home to play.
I mean, the girls that obviously I talk about as my foster sisters, one of five of us, had they been there long before I arrived?
I don't think so. Were they there when you arrived?
Yeah, they're definitely there. All the girls.
Okay. No, they wouldn't have been there very long. And the stories that we were told about why they were there are really off.
Yeah.
And I always thought, if I ever have a chance, I'm going to come back here and work as a welfare worker. Because it used to make me sick.
Yeah.
And we weren't supposed to know why anybody was in there.
Oh, true.
No, that was private.
Really?
Yeah, that was welfare.
Yeah, we were
just the house parents and no one told us anything.
Were you briefed on, because obviously we all came with our bag of traumas.
We heard a little bit about you and I don't know where that came from. Yeah. It must have come from one of the welfare workers. Yeah.
How interesting. Because I would have thought you would have been at least briefed. Well, so then you were prepared for whatever behaviours we would have been exhibiting.
Half the time people just turned up and you didn't know they were coming. So you had no idea and no one was going to tell you. They just say, okay, then Murphy's going to turn up tonight. She's 13 or whatever and blah, blah. Oh, okay. So, yeah, we didn't get a lot of history about the kids.
Wow.
I used to call case conferences at the cottage instead of going into the welfare office.
I remember you doing that. I remember you doing that.
I used to find out a lot more that way.
Yeah.
By having the welfare workers, because they didn't come out much.
Yeah.
They didn't do much with the kids at all. And I thought, you were doing nothing about placing those Aboriginal kids, you know, that was really getting to me.
Yeah.
And one of the girls, I don't know whether we're supposed to be talking this far ahead, but one of the girls said that she wanted to go home to help her mother. As soon as welfare heard that she wanted to go out there to help her mother, that was it. She was packed up and shoveled off. And they wouldn't let her back.
So shoveled off back to
anywhere to live.
So they hadn't checked out the environment or where she was going to be.
No.
Just literally.
And this poor kid, she used to ring us honestly about 10, 20 times a day.
Yeah.
I want to come home. So anyway, welfare said she wasn't to come back. That's where she wanted to be. We said, well, if you don't go out and get her, we will.
Yeah, right. So that happened during the time that we were together.
So we put the foot down.
Yeah,
she's ours.
She's ours. That was our family.
Yeah, so we trundled out there and
picked her up. And she walked straight into the house and into the pantry.
As any child should do. And the fridge.
But isn't that interesting? Like, the welfare you would think would be the one that would be responsible for making sure that children in care
are safe
and protected. Yeah.
There seemed to be a different mindset out there. Ah, thank goodness I've got a job. Oh, well, I won't stress myself.
Who's that?
The people out there.
Mm.
Well, the nurses out in the communities were about the same.
So, that's how we ended up at Matthew's cottage. I went and applied for the job. And we dragged the caravan around there and we made ourselves at home there.
Yeah.
I just can't remember how long it was that we were there when you turned up.
Yeah. Well, I remember that it was around August because that was around the time that I had left my aunt and uncle in Melbourne.
Right.
But I lasted 2 weeks with my parents.
No, they were just pushing you to go back to your mum and dad.
Yeah.
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 Because you would have been safe. You would have had a roof over your head. That's all they're concerned about.
Yeah. Which is interesting. I was having this conversation with Joe the other day, and it would have been easy for welfare or even for you guys to have me go back home because I wasn't physically abused. I didn't have cigarette burns in my skin. I didn't have alcoholic parents.
There's all stages of abuse.
You know what I mean? Like, on the face of it, and yet you really supported me.
God, I knew what it was like.
Yeah.
Yeah, coming from a religious background myself.
Yeah.
And not even allowed to go roller skating without being dragged off the rink. You're going to go to hell.
How interesting.
But the relationship with your parents was very interesting.
Because yours and Kathy's would have been very similar, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, very similar. Well, probably more stringent on Kathy's part, but Mum was a Brethren, and then when we came out to Australia, they couldn't find a Brethren place, so they joined the Baptist Church.
Yeah, right.
And, yeah, they were strict, very strict. Wayne was washing the car one Sunday morning. Mum says to me, well, if it's like, what's it going to be like when you're married?
Well, what do you mean?
Well, we're supposed to be at church.
Oh, okay. Yeah, wow.
So to keep the peace, I went to the church. Every time I stayed for the weekend, down there to the place.
Oh, true love. There you go.
Oh, is he coming again? I'll have to change the sheets again. I said, well, he didn't dirty them last.
But definitely, if it had been anywhere else, I don't think anyone would have had the same empathy for my situation if you hadn't experienced your own religious upbringing.
And it was.
Yeah.
Very strict. No pictures, no movies, no lipstick, no nothing.
Yeah. I've literally written in some of the episodes. The first episode is being raised as a child of a Jehovah's Witness family. Yeah. And everything you just mentioned then is everything that I had to experience.
I asked if I could learn ballroom dancing because one of the friends at school was learning at the School of Arts. I had my pocket money stopped for a couple of weeks for asking for that.
Yeah, right. it's just crazy, especially when you are a parent yourself and you think of how, that impacts.
Yeah, and they say children. You shouldn't live your past and all that, but it's there. But
it's still there, yeah. Yeah.
It shouldn't ruin your life now, though.
Well, part of that episode that I write was about how important it was that we're responsible adults as to who we bring into our children's invisible village because they've got no choice.
Yeah, yeah.
Over what and who comes in to their village.
And how long did we stay? We were there for a couple of years.
Yeah.
We couldn't remember dates and things, but it was the hardest thing we ever did was to leave that place.
Yeah. I still remember you guys leaving. Oh. I still remember us girls out on the lawn, bawling our eyes out.
we had the caravan out, and the only reason we had to hang around another couple of weeks was because they wouldn't pay us earlier. And we said, forwarded, no, you'll have to wait till you get your pay. And that's when the kids all started riding their bikes out. To the village.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
Right up to St. Mary's?
Yeah.
True. Well, I mean, I used to ride out there anyway for work.
Yes, you did. You did. Yeah. How long did you work at Blue Cottage?
2 years.
2 years?
Yeah.
And then you worked at the grocery store.
No, I did that as a second job after school. I don't remember why I gave that job up. It was a long way, though, too. I rode my bike over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the racer. My racer that I used to trundle out to St. Mary's, out to Blue Cottage.
Yeah.
Every weekend. But yeah. I actually think it's something that I instilled in my kids. I had them working from 13 because I actually believe that gave me so much. Well, one, I had to get there.
Yeah.
So my work ethic. Two, obviously, then I had my own money. So I remember you helping me work out budgeting and my cigarettes and moisturiser.
Gotta have those bags.
And it also helped me appreciate that there's so many more people that are worse off. Like the core of working with children with disabilities.
Yeah. Mm. You were good at that too. You sort of fell into it.
Yeah. Well, you helped me get that job.
What was Blue Cottage?
Disabled.
Was it disabled?
Yeah, it was the kids with disabilities.
Yeah, it was Claire had that cottage. I've been still pushing those boys around those great big wheelchairs. She was a strong little thing. It's hard to believe that she's probably not here anymore.
Yeah, that's really sad.
Yeah.
For me, in reflecting on part one of our fireside lounge room conversation, there were a few highlights that make Sheila and Wayne amazing characters in my invisible village. Their undeniable desire to work with kids that were at risk, and for me personally, the belief and empathy they had in what could only be described as a mental trauma that I experienced as a child of a Jehovah's Witness family. Each of us children in Matthew Cottage all had our own stories and traumas of why we had been placed there. Yet Sheila and Wayne created a family union with the core five of us, combined with the coming and goings of dozens of other babies, kids and teenagers. Together as children, we had our invisible village of safety, acceptance, growth and belief. I invite and welcome into part two of the next episode of my story, Raised by an Invisible Village, creating a safe and connected space for you and I. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the series Raised by an Invisible Village, and these real life stories have provided you with the opportunity to reflect about your own invisible village, a moment in time to uncover those who accept you, support your growth, and celebrate your success, and the recognition that you also are a character in someone else's invisible village, and how important our roles are as mentors, influencers, and champions. I'd love to stay connected and encourage you and others to join me by subscribing to my podcast channels. Together, we can continue to recognize the power of our invisible village for acceptance, growth, and success.